Today on the Cooligans, we're talking about Weston McKennie. He is apparently going to be a free agent this summer, which is crazy. Where is he going to end up? And we also try to figure out who are some of our secret weapons for the USMNT. Who can shine out and surprise us this summer?
That's right. But you know who doesn't surprise us? Another wonderful interview. And we got Lawrence Kahn this time. Lawrence Kahn this time. Absolutely incredible. Street Soccer USA. You're really good. I got that on the first try. Don't worry about that, folks. And of course, after that, we got Rapido Reactions. And Christian gets super Latino. Huge news that hemorrhoid I brought up a couple days ago burst. Yeah.
What a disgust. You know, a lot of times.
Let me tell you something.
A lot of times we start the show and Alex is like, no, we don't want to talk about that. That's just going to kill the mood. Yeah. This is the most disgusting thing you have ever started the show
yeah,
with.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. It felt like it. it was so painful. And guess what, folks? Still is. But let that not deter from Alexis launching his own YouTube channel.
Okay. Are you gonna, is that the first video?
No. I will do a video on that actually. Let's see how it goes. I want to experiment a little, you know what I mean? Let's just feel our bodies out, you know, on the internet.
A colonoscopy.
Buddy, gonna get pilot. One. Turns out at this age, when you get a burst, they tell you to go get one. And my mom works at a colonoscopy the
factory. She works at a colonoscopy factory.
Right? I'm going to a factory. I'm going to the Bronx. We're going to change a tire on an Audi next to me while someone, aided by my mother, poops a camera up my butt. And it's a regular camera. It's not even one that's supposed to go up your butt. So let's see how far it goes. But the reason I say all that is
Hitachi. yeah. VHS camera.
Buddy, is that 4K? Because I saw you load a tape into that thing. Why are you putting it on my butt? Well, but no, the YouTube channel.
Congratulations.
The YouTube channel.
Go check out Alexis's YouTube channel.
And you know what I did with the first video? I burned it all down, folks.
Burned it all down. The hemorrhoid is gone.
The hemorrhoid. You know, the hemorrhoid was symbolic, I think.
Yes. Great video. Talking.
What'd you think? What are your thoughts?
The Thierry Henry.
You knew the story.
Yeah, I knew the story already. So obviously the world, gets to take a look behind the curtain of like
what, never meet what, your heroes,
what
folks.
You how you pissed off Thierry Henry. But look, I'm glad the world gets to know.
You think he has something to do with my hemorrhoid, dog? You think he hit the button?
Only one way to find out.
The second video. Did Henry burst my hemorrhoid?
I'll be honest. Thierry Henry's been real quiet since you got that hemorrhoid, bro. I don't know.
Let me tell you something. Well, it's mostly gone. Now there's a few remnants.
Michael Richards is talking about it, Henry.
Michael will talk about it a lot. I got a lot of a ton of questions, DMs, comments, texts, WhatsApps, Signal, whatever. I got a lot of responses. A lot of it from our fans who were like, yo, I've been begging to hear what happened. I wanted to know what happened. And I know you were telling me like, yo, the Patreon lit up. What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And they still asking to this day. So I'm glad I could answer some of those questions. Legally, I had to wait a little while as well before I could talk about it. But turns out I might have done a boo-boo with my NDA, but we'll see. It'll match the boo-boo on my butt. We'll see. Whatever. Right. There's lawyers involved. I'm glad it's out there, but I want to do something fun. And to answer everyone's questions, people are like, yo, you going to talk about soccer here? No, baby, that's what Cooligans is for.
Exactly.
Why am I looking at the camera? This is audio only. Cooligans only for soccer stuff.
I mean, it is being video recorded. You.
Yeah.
Look wherever you want, bro. There's no rules.
I'll look at my own hemorrhoid. I think it's cool. It'll be fun to do something stupid and for the shits and giggles, you know?
Yeah.
I spent 2 years talking about soccer 14 hours a week. Between live TV and this podcast, I don't need to add more. I love the fact that I get to continue to do Cooligans and talk about it here. But this is for me to be dumb about a whole bunch of other stuff and for you to see my stand-up. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Don't hit the subscribe button.
Don't hit the subscribe button.
If You do not plan on watching every single video from beginning to end, Alexis, and sharing it with your friends. You are, do not hit the subscribe button. You know what you can do? No. Hit the like button.
You're too YouTube-pilled, bro. You don't know how to talk to normal people. Don't know what you're talking about.
I'm telling you now, which is why I'm telling you now. Do not hit the subscribe button thinking you're helping, and then you're never going to click on one of my videos again. It doesn't help. It hurts.
But if you don't subscribe, then you may not get recommended the video.
That's fine. You know what? Just click on my link in bio if you want to see
Alexis
what I got
like,
going
yo,
on.
Yo, don't check out my YouTube channel.
Oh, no.
It is stupid.
Check it out. It is stupid, by the way.
I'm wasting my time.
100%.
But you know that's where it's at.
But I need you to go find it. And if you think you want to be a part of the journey, then hit that button. If you don't, if you just a homie, hey, hit the like button, share it with a friend, and that's it. Walk away.
You sound like a goddamn AI chat.
Don't hurt that. Don't hurt my algorithm, bro.
Okay.
You know how sensitive, one, my butthole, and two, my algorithm is, bro.
Okay. Tease the algorithm. Yeah.
Ask me how much it bleeds when one of them burst. Ask me.
I'm literally not going to ask you. Welcome to the cooling,
no, what are you gonna ask
everybody.
Me? Somebody, hold on, Carter, yell it. How much does your butthole bleed?
This is so gross.
Ingrid, you do it. Say, ask me how much does your asshole bleed when a hemorrhoid pops?
You don't have to do this, Ingrid.
Someone do it. I'm not going to start the show until we do this.
Then we're not going to start the show.
All right. How much does it hurt when you pop your hemorrhoid?
I said, how much does it bleed?
I'm sure a lot. My sister's a nurse.
You didn't ask. Why are you starting a story? How much does it bleed, Alexis? I'll tell you. A lot. A lot. And also, a lot more than you think.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad we start. Now we can start the show. Go ahead. Tell them how excited and hot
just
this episode
keep
is.
Keep in mind, Alexis did not want us to talk about Venezuela Monday. You're like, no, this game.
No. It's not that I didn't want to talk about Venezuela. It's that anytime we do an intro, Christian's like, hey, a school bus collided with a boulder. Let's start the show on that fun note. And oh my God, stop watching the news, Christian.
And look at what you started with.
It's my own hemorrhoid.
Real fun.
It's my own hemorrhoid.
Literally making us all want to vomit start the show.
All right, you know what? DM me or post a comment in our video whether you enjoyed the hemorrhoid talk.
Okay.
Also, it's relatable. People got hemorrhoids?
Literally. I don't know how relatable that is. Anyway, welcome.
Everyone who's pushed out a baby got a hemorrhoid. What did I do? I kind of pushed out something that weighs like a baby.
Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We have a hot show coming
up. Oh, boy.
Coming up for you. We're going to be joined.
What are you feeling about today's show?
I'm feeling quite excited. Oh! We're going to be joined by the one and only Lawrence Pan, the founder of True Soccer USA. Mm. We're going to talk to him. A lot of people don't really understand the sort of ins and outs of what grassroots soccer in America sort of looks like. That make it available and free, or even just have kids be playing in the hood.
He's fighting the good fight.
He's fighting the good fight. So a lot of times people like him that are doing such incredible work, it's nice to shine the spotlight a little bit on that. But let's start today's show. Weston McKennie's time at Juventus is reportedly coming to an end. He is going to be one of the most sought-after players this summer. But where should he end up?
Wherever he goes, get away from Juventus. 3 years in a row? Nah.
Okay, he's going to have a lot of interest, especially from other leagues in Europe. But Juve, to me, seems like the best place to end up. Champions League, he's shining week in and week out and getting a lot of playing time. That's the most important thing.
He is, which makes you wonder why for a third year in a row they're telling him, yo, you're not in our plans. They did it when it was Max Allegri, and then boom, he stuck around. He got in better shape. He got on the pitch. Less than a season ago, they said he was so versatile. No matter where you put him on the pitch, you had to keep him on the pitch regardless of what position. And now all of a sudden, it's reportedly, they're discussing getting not re-signing him or not extending his contract or not giving him another contract. Like, what are we doing, bro? If the guy's that versatile, let him go elsewhere. And I have a feeling that Serie A teams are going to come knocking. AC Milan are going to try to figure out a way to get a second American on there. And for the most part, I think he's not going to lack suitors. I don't know if he's going to get much love from the Premier League. But
it didn't
Serie A,
go well at Leeds. The loan at Leeds didn't go too well. But he's a much better player than he was When he
and he's was, in better shape because remember the Leeds fans were chanting that he was fat.
Yes, I mean, come up with another chant,
right?
I mean, he's a decent player. I mean, I wouldn't describe him as fat. That's like one of the
right
an odd way to describe
that time
him.
He had that youthful,
a little bigger, little maybe chubby's even right. He just doesn't necessarily look like
if he was British, they would have loved it. Let's be honest, right. But he also didn't have a great spell there. It wasn't necessarily the best preview of what you might get from a Weston McKennie in the Premier League
right.
with his time at Leeds. That said, I do think, were he given a chance, he'd be a great player in the Premier League. I just don't know if suitors are going to be coming for him from the Premier League. But I also don't think he needs it. I could see him going to potentially a La Liga club. You know, maybe mid-table, a little bit lower, not necessarily the most techie with the ball at his feet. Mm-hmm. But I could see him getting a chance. He's a versatile player. Atletico Madrid, great player for Atletico Madrid. I could see him going to another Serie A club, Napoli, perfect spot for a player like him.
Also, I mean, he is going to have interest in Bundesliga as well.
Former Bundesliga player.
I've heard, you know, clubs. Obviously, Schalke would take him back in a heartbeat, but obviously, I think he has much bigger ambitions than that. But he is a Champions League player, and he can go. I think he's going to have a lot of really good options in front of him. And I wonder, you know, because he's going to be a free agent, he could, you know, right after the transfer window, or I think beginning now, he can sign a pre-contract mm-hmm. to sign with his next club. Do you think he should wait it out a little bit? Don't sign anything. Have the World Cup. And then after the World Cup, maybe he has a good World Cup and boom. And he can kind of go wherever he wants and have a much, you know, I think more people, even more eyes on him and more people interested in signing him afterwards.
I think it's a great question. I think we'll see how much him and his agent trust how much playing time he's going to get under Mauricio Pochettino based on whether he does that or not. Because if he does do that, that signals to me like, hey, he's worried he might not have the greatest World Cup of all time. But I think he should wait because I think he's proven himself. In fact, do you think he should go to MLS after the World Cup? A World Cup in the United States, one of the biggest American players, one of the biggest names in American soccer, coming back to MLS.
Well, he never played in MLS.
Well, but he was FC
Dallas
here.
Yes, yeah. FC Dallas Academy product mm-hmm. and at a young age went to Schalke. I think it's because it's – how old will he be after the World Cup?
27?
How old is he now? He is 27. I don't have his birthday here, but I would assume he's going to be either 27 or 28 after the World Cup.
It's post World Cup, so I'm almost fine with it. Post World Cup,
I'm like, get your bag.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you would expect him to be at the next World Cup.
Right.
Could he do that, plying his trade in MLS? Yes, of course.
So there was a moment where there was potentially was going to come back to MLS. Remember FC Dallas had, I'm sorry, FC Cincinnati.
Yes.
Made a massive offer.
Boger had reported that was a potential.
There's something I found out from a very trusted source, a very inside source, not Tom Boger, but someone that probably Tom Boger knows. Mm-hmm. I found out that part of that offer that he wanted and why the offer fell apart is he was asking for a percentage, maybe small, maybe big, I don't know, probably very small, percentage ownership of the team.
He wanted to own a piece of FC Cincinnati to sign with the club.
So think about it. He would be a very marketable name if he goes to a MLS club. He would be a big American player coming back home. He thought, or his agent thought, if we're gonna do this,
swing for the fences.
Hey, buddy, if you really want me to leave Europe,
he's like stock options.
Yeah, dead ass. He asked for a portion of the club. I don't know how big. It could have been tiny. It could have been ceremonial, or it could have been significant. But do you think that gets dangled in front of him again after the World Cup? What a weird way to say that. I agree
no,
with you.
No, I mean, with all due respect to Weston McKennie, there is no, if I'm an owner of an MLS team, there is no way I'm even considering giving a ownership of the team, a portion.
Can I ask why? Let's set a scenario.
I'm not getting my return.
Let's say a Sporting Kansas City, Sporting Kansas City. They're in the middle of nowhere, right? They need to draw.
Sorry, Kansas City.
Hold on. Let me explain that.
Apologies to all of my listeners.
You know I love you. By the way, every flight I've ever taken, you no screens. What are we doing? I don't know why you don't have screens. Does nobody go to Kansas City? But what I mean is they don't have a lot of rivals near them. So they're kind of isolated out there, right? So
I mean, St. Louis City is right there, but okay,
it's not too far, and it's brand new. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, if you think about it, right, like even where they can pluck players from, they've had to go outside of.
Sure, sure.
So for that point, I mean, they're not like a condensed area where they're like, no, that we know marketing. So they have a ton of fans. It's easy to promote the club. Having a player like Weston McKennie go to that club, if he signs a 4 or 5 year deal at 28, you could have him until he's what, 33? You could have him for six years, where this is a big name, a son of USMNT, someone formed in MLS, going and playing in the World Cup. Let's say they do well, it comes back home. You don't think it would be worthwhile for, let's say, a San Jose Earthquakes or or Sporting Kansas City, say, yo, here's 0.5%, 0.5% of the club.
Yeah, which is like millions of dollars. No,
it's not millions of dollars.
Yeah, it is 0.5% of the club is at least a couple million dollars of value.
You don't think that's worth it to say like, yo, here, we're going to pay you $8 million a year, which is what a typical DP gets.
No, you're paying them the salary. Look, I mean, if you were talking about Landon Donovan's a great example. Landon Donovan is that. Came back from Europe.
What are you talking about, came back from Europe? He barely was there. How long was he at Everton? 4 months? Five months?
He could have stayed, but he chose to come back.
But, all right, this is a little different. This is a guy who went and proved. I'm just saying, he can play at the highest levels in Europe.
Yes, I understand.
No disrespect to Everton or Bayer Leverkusen when he couldn't hack it, or Bayern Munich, if I remember those are the two clubs he played at.
Yeah.
Landon Donovan, he never really hacked it. At Everton, he looked great, and I wish he would have stayed. But he never proved, yo, you could do it at Champions League, you could do this. This guy's scoring headers with Cristiano Ronaldo
I'm not necessarily comparing their like resumes. I'm saying their influence, right? Landon Donovan is a more influential figure.
Sure.
Than Weston McKennie.
The only player you can compare him to that would be bigger coming back home right now is Christian Pulisic. That's it.
Christian Pulisic, I would also not offer ownership
to. Yeah, you're crazy. You're crazy.
Josie Altidore, Michael Bradley, Clint Dempsey, these players that came back from Europe were playing. Clint Dempsey, light years ahead of like what the other contributions of the other two. And
if you would have said him, I would have agreed with you. If Seattle would have given him 0.5% of the club, let's go 0.25. You know what I mean? It's less millions, so you don't get so upset. If you give Clint Dempsey 0.25 in that era, I think that's worth it.
Maybe I wouldn't do it. You're paying them to like Weston McKennie going to FC Cincinnati and being as a draw to join the team. Let's say he does go to FC Cincinnati. Like, this is still upsetting to a lot of people because everybody's going to be like, why isn't he in Europe? Who cares about the money? He's young. He should still. Right.
But I think we set the stage by saying he's going to be what? Roughly 28, if not already 28.
Right, right, right.
And he's going to be post-World Cup. It's like, I'm not worried about how you're going to be in the World Cup when you're 31 years old.
Okay. I mean, this is. The Cooligans are reporting this was a. I don't know how many sources Alexis has, but he is standing by.
I just want you to know they are reputable.
Okay.
The type of people you don't think I would ever hang out with.
But that's what we heard. So I don't know. Look, as far as where he ends up, especially after this World Cup, I mean, this will be his last big contract, you would imagine. And he is a player. He is a Swiss Army knife kind of a thing. So it's like you wonder. Not many teams need this exact type of player because they have people to have these like specific and individualized roles. But I look with Juve. He's obviously he's won what, two trophies: Coppa Italia and Supercoppa. Mm-hmm. So I think he's done. What he sort of needs to do in Italy.
He's proven as a top Serie A
yeah,
talent.
Juve is not the Juve of 10 years ago where they were absolutely dominating. So it would be cool to see him in the Premier League. I don't know if that's a reality, but it would be awesome to see him at like Dortmund or Bayern Munich being able to just win the league wherever he is. But MLS, I think, is a real possibility, especially. Again, after the World Cup, and you would imagine that he might be able to get the most money from an MLS team.
Yeah, 100%
at this point,
because he would guarantee to be a DP.
Exactly,
unless he wants to take no DP money and go to Miami like everyone else. is doing. Everybody's locking in Pulisic and Reyna. Yeah, yeah, that's a little boring. How about the players you're not thinking about that we guarantee are going to make it to the World Cup squad in 2026? Who's your secret weapon?
So I think, you know, especially after the match against Newcastle, something's going on. Brendan Aaronson, bro. He's like, bro, he is like prime Neymar all of a sudden, doing stepovers in the box, trying to make a difference, but scoring goals for Leeds. And I think it's incredibly impressive for him to be able to play like this right now.
Where he came from at Leeds, too, where sort of he was kind of in the outs a little bit with the fans. They thought of him as like, yeah, he's an engine guy, but he does nothing with the ball when he gets to the final third. He has proven he had another level, and he's reached that level.
And then he went out, right? Obviously, he was with Leeds, then went out on loan to Union Berlin. It couldn't have gotten any worse. He couldn't get minutes, couldn't figure out what to do out there. And then comes back and finds minutes and finds opportunity. But when he is, even in the game against Lucas, they ended up losing 4-3. And it was, you know, obviously a crazy game. But his the confidence, I mean, we talk about this all the time in football. Like, oh, if they just got confidence, especially like the main thing. And it's interesting the way Leeds plays. They've been playing with two strikers, and they have him as one of the strikers. And he seems to be better as a striker than a winger or an attacking midfielder. So they take away a lot of the other responsibility of like some defensive work, and he is shining. And you see the pace that he scored against Manchester United. It's really, really impressive. And I think if he keeps doing this, not only is he going to be like, I don't think he's necessarily a starter at the World Cup, but he's going to be coming off the bench and be incredibly impactful.
Change of pace. There's a couple more. There's multiple positions you could put him in as a sub. If you're Mauricio Pochettino, you could sort of place him where he's needed most. But I think you hit the nail on the head. He's so versatile that it almost worked against him, because you could be like, oh, you could kind of put him anywhere. And well, he's got a big engine and he's fast and he never stops running and he chases every ball down. So throw him in the midfield, throw him in the wing. Now when you figure out exactly what position to put him in, you see him shine.
Exactly.
So shouts to Leeds for doing that, because that's impressive. And also, you got to have balls when you're out there. You know what I mean? You got to take the shot when the shot's available to you. That's part of the confidence.
Your uncle from New Jersey telling you how to play soccer.
Hey, kid, get out there. Get out there. Show him you got balls. My player, a player who I think also shows you he has balls, is James Sands.
Okay.
Someone that we went out and saw him play, and that changed my perception of him as a player when you see him live. Very different than when you see him on the television. You're looking at a player who, at New York City FC, and he's on loan at St. Pauli, a New York City FC player who showed you defensively stout, willing to get in there. You've seen, you know, a little bit of versatility when he's scoring the header at Miami. But you're thinking of this guy. He's like potential center back, maybe a defensive midfielder. Very good defensive midfielder, maybe outside of MLS in Europe. He goes to Bundesliga. And what we saw from him was this is the type of player that was chasing balls down in there, you know, going to the final third to chase balls down and start to press and moving forward, moving the ball forward outside of the defensive midfielder position. And I said, okay, he's... Remember the way we were looking at John Scali, another New York City FC product? We're looking at him.
Joe, sorry.
I keep saying John Scali. I think I grew up with someone named John Scali. Joe Scali. We looked at the way we looked at Joe Scali, another New York City FC product. The way we looked at him was like, all right, do your thing defensively, please. When you get the ball, just get it away from you as fast as possible in the direction of another U.S. men's national team player, and they'll figure out what to do with it. And then you started to see like, wait a minute, he's actually better than we thought moving the ball forward.
Yeah.
Maybe you can't ask him to do too much. James Sands is that times 10. We've seen he's adept at the ball much further up the field than what we saw. And that, to me, reads the versatility that you talked about with James Sands. I'm sorry, with Brendan Aaronson. I think Mauricio Pochettino is going to see that and say, okay, he does more than just the position we're going to put him in, and that might be needed. And if you ask him to just sit back and defend, he's clearly very good at that.
Yeah.
Again, not a starter, but I think...
I'm still a little bit... I'm worried... because when we were in Germany and we were at the game and saw him play, they ended up winning. When we left, they were like, St. Pauli was like in fourth place, third place. They were doing fantastic. And now they are fighting relegation. They lost like 10, 12 games in a row.
Yeah, it hasn't gone great for them.
Or we're winless. So it has not gone well these
last
3 months.
Can I give you the silver lining? He's playing a lot of 90 minutes and he's looking good.
He is playing a lot. So you love to see that.
Also, he came back from a really bad injury. I think he had... It was an ankle, and then there was two injuries. It was reported that it was two injuries. Mm-hmm. So to come back from that, which took him out for many months,
sure.
that goes to show just the level of fitness he's in as well.
Okay, all right, I'll go with my next player. My secret weapon, another off the bench Swiss Army knife. Both work with both feet, can do it all. Max Arfston. I think this is look. We see Jedi Robinson at Fulham, and he's coming back from injury, really coming into his own. This is exactly what you want from your starting left back for the U.S. men's national team. But Max Arfston, who knows what happens with Jedi Robinson? Injuries come back, or maybe he's not available immediately. To start the World Cup. But Max Arfston is a player who, and we've already seen it. We saw it at Gold Cup. We've seen it for plenty of other windows. Can do a lot in that position. And like I said, he's incredibly accurate, whether it's passing or shooting.
Crossing is incredible.
Crossing, yeah, with both feet or taking corners. Another thing to consider if we need to, off a set piece or we need to score late, bring him on. We'll see what he can do. But Max Arfston is another a player that I think it can, especially with Jedi Robinson coming into his own, is going to take sort of a backseat to what Anthony Robinson is doing. But Max Arfston, I think, is going to be incredibly effective.
I can see that.
At this World Cup.
I can see that. And the games he's played against, played under Mauricio Pochettino, have given you the confidence to suggest, he not only has a lot of talent that maybe you don't often see when he's in MLS, but, he clearly can do it on the national team level. And I'm going to go with another name that also did the same thing, Sebastian Berhalter. I think he proved to the world, getting to the MLS Cup final was great. Probably not the best game for anybody involved in Vancouver. Getting to MLS Cup final, awesome. But what really impressed me was the step forward he took as a leader when he was playing under Mauricio Pochettino in the U.S. Men's National Team shirt. He proved to you that he's a versatile midfielder. He's a midfielder that's willing to put the ball at his feet. He's willing to make those decisions. But he's also just one of those guys. And the stats don't really show you. With Arfston or Berhalter, don't really show you what you're really getting from them when they're on the pitch. And that's someone who's going to go at the defender in front of him. Someone who's going to make a relatively right decision with the ball at his feet. Under no circumstances do I think Sebastian Berhalter will be starting when it comes time for the World Cup. The midfield is already packed as it is.
Yeah.
But is this a guy you want to pull off your bench? Do you need in the second
set
when you
pieces,
look over?
Another one. Corners.
When you look over, are you going to have confidence to put him in? He's proven to me, to you, and hopefully to Mauricio Pochettino and to every men's national team fan that he is a guy that you can have confidence in 20, 25 minutes in a game. He's going to do a job. He's not going to let you down.
Also, just a quick retraction. Mm-hmm. We don't do these often, but I was talking about Max Arfston, obviously, for the Columbus Crew. We were talking about Wilfred Nancy last episode.
This was you. I don't know what you're talking about.
we can all collectively, the whole Yahoo team, everybody, we can all apologize for this.
Yeah.
But
we had no idea.
We were talking about Wilfred Nancy possibly coming back to the Columbus Crew. And we're like, they haven't hired a coach yet. They did hire a coach.
Yeah.
And
I suggest you do a better job of letting people know that because we had no clue.
What's the coach's name, Carter? Can he get his name?
We still don't know.
We still don't know his name. Oh. I forgot the name. It's like a European name or something. Henrik Rydstrom. So the coach was hired on this December 31st, on New Year's Eve. There's a lot of things going on New Year's Eve.
How am I?
We're a little bit busy on New Year's Eve.
Buddy, I'm elbow deep in sangria. And you think I'm going to remember? You think I'm Googling who Columbus Crew hired?
So on top of that,
they didn't wait to make the announcement.
Then a Venezuelan president gets kidnapped like the next day. And
Columbus soccer happenings didn't hit the top of it.
I don't know. And that's the thing is that we're MLS sickos. We're locked in.
Buddy.
This did not even remotely pop up on any of our timelines.
If I think hard, I still can't remember. Before
we were doing the segment, we didn't even think to look.
Nobody thought Google that. Nobody in the organization, not us, not the people who made the thumbnail. Nobody thought to Google this.
Because there's no way.
Why would you Google it? What are you talking about?
We would have seen it.
Yeah.
But we did not
see it. The only way we would have known about it if Maduro looked at the camera while being kidnapped and said, congratulations to the new Columbus Crew host.
Nike Tech, bro. Yeah.
What's his name again?
Henrik Rydstrom.
Buddy, congratulations on the job. You know, if you just would have waited, you might have been able to hire Wilfred Nancy again. I'm just going
to
say.
You did it too early. Yeah. But best of luck to Max Arfton and Coach Rydstrom. Yes. All right. Absolutely thrilled about our next guest. This is a man who we've worked with already for years, mm-hmm. but really we never really sat down to have a conversation. But clearly, one of the most influential, I think, people when it comes to grassroots soccer in this country and just doing a lot of stuff to not only grow the game but help a lot of people.
A lot of
along
people
the
say
way.
They're doing the stuff that this man is actually doing.
Exactly, we're all talk. I mean, I put a lot of great things on my resume. Uh-huh. I don't actually do them.
I actually just stole his resume.
but the founder of Street Soccer USA, which again I mentioned it earlier, an incredible organization that does a lot for the country and again growing the game. The one and only Lawrence Cann. Lawrence, what's up, brother?
What's going on? Thank you, guys. No, it's Street Soccer's an awesome mission, and it's more than me. It's we had an amazing team of people, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Okay,
he did the award speech.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, I'd like to thank
the executive producers.
No, I'm the star.
Yeah, no, you won the award right now, but they ain't here. They ain't on the show. You are
Lawrence. Let people know a little bit about you know, the elevator pitch of Street Soccer USA and what you guys do.
Yeah, you bet. So our mission is a beautiful mission to fight poverty and strengthen communities through soccer. So, you know, what does that mean? It means really building an infrastructure at the grassroots level for the game, because it's kind of broken. Like, we've designed a great system, the great people involved in soccer, and the pay-to-play system that excludes so many people. And so when you think of all the relationships I formed in my life through soccer, you know, that's powerful. That's what, you know, has made you know, the pathways in my life possible. So we're trying to build that same community. But there are 11 million kids in the country that live at the poverty line or below. And increasingly, sports, which used to be a big unifier, is a divider, you know, because it's logistically and economically out of reach. And soccer is like, you know, we have this beautiful tool, a soccer ball, that anybody can use, but, you know, it shouldn't be out of reach. So we're building local leagues, we're building parks and building programs across the country in the high need neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Now, what have you thought about, there's going to be so many kids that never got a chance to play because they didn't have the income or their parents didn't have the jobs or the time to afford them to get them to these games, you're starting a lot of these leagues. You're putting up pitches where they get a chance to play. And maybe some of these kids could go on and have a professional career. Do you make a cut of that? You know what I mean?
Is that the plan?
How do we get our beaks wet?
Yeah, we don't want to go deep into, like, you know, transfer payments and those are signing
third
them
party
up.
Ownership. Yeah. Solidarity. What type of documents do these kids sign?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a long-term play for the founders. I've been studying to be an agent. Yeah. And that's where we're headed.
The founders were just a bunch of guys smoking cigars on a steamboat.
Yeah. I wish it were a little bit more like that sometimes. Yeah. Every now and then.
Would make things a lot easier.
But it's like,
it?
You know, you guys have been in this game for a long time. And unless you love it, unless you believe in it, I mean, that's what sustains you. So it's amazing actually to see where we are today and like where we started. We literally started with like a single team in North Carolina working. Actually, we were working out of a homeless center. And there were these kids, 19, 20 years old, and they were like me when I was a kid, but they just didn't have the same support system. Mm-hmm. So being it's like a, what do you call it, a carpenter with a hammer and everything looks like a nail. As a soccer player, it's like, oh, like soccer is a great solution here. Yeah, like, let's create a team.
This will be easy.
It'll be easy. Well,
look at all this space. Let's try to make one phone call and I have a pitch.
The soccer part was easy, right?
Yeah.
You know, because we knew how to do that. And then it was a medium to like build relationships, and relationships change lives. And I think we try to stay true to that. Like, we value every single relationship we have. And I think that's why we've been able to stick around. But, you know, what we learned is when we started that team and people started to show up to practice and count on us, and, you know, that it was, you're getting involved in people's lives. It has to be a long-term endeavor. So my brother, I got him involved. And we got started and we were like, it's like going into a tunnel. Like, I don't know where this ends, but like we got to commit. And we stay true to that. And that's, I think, what we're really proud of.
No, it's great to see. I mean, we were talking earlier before we started recording, but Shoe Soccer USA. You're from Richmond, Virginia.
Yep.
And you had worked with Daryl, our friend Daryl Grove of Total Soccer Show. We got the his poster up there, and it's great to hear. Because what did you say specifically that Daryl was doing when helping you guys?
Well, Daryl, you know, we were talking earlier. I almost got choked up. I just think of it. You know, it's just what an amazing guy, he pioneered in soccer here. But you know, when we started, we took a team, the first U.S. team, to the Homeless World Cup, and we started with no budget or anything, but we had these amazing outcomes with these kids we were working with, and we had some like media, and that helped us. All of a sudden, homeless service agencies reached out to us from across the country, and Daryl was in Richmond, and he called up and said, "How do I get involved?" And so he connected with the Daily Planet, which was the homeless service center in Richmond, and he started coaching the team just on a volunteer basis, and came to our national cups in D.C. and New York, and was just the guy of his own time that just committed to this. And that's really how we started. Everyone at Street Soccer was like volunteering, and we just turned it into something that I think is serious and organized, that is commensurate with like the value of what we're trying to build, you know.
But it's exactly the type of thing Daryl would
totally
do.
Yeah. Totally, yeah.
The most Daryl Grove thing.
Because I mean, when,
and not tell anybody about it, and just
100%. You know. I mean, we were on a tour with him in 2018 where we did the World Cup comedy tour. And he didn't mention this, right? He didn't talk about.
He doesn't boast.
But he did it. Every week, multiple times. Like, was the guy in these people's lives?
Yeah.
And yeah, totally.
What's the hardest part about the job you do? Is it convincing new municipalities that you need a pitch here? Is it finding sponsors? Is it finding coaches? What is it? It can't be the
donations,
kids.
Money. I mean, it's a lot of work. Right?
What's the number one pain in the, you know?
You know, we just build up a tolerance for pain. Like, honestly, it's all brain damage and hard in the stress.
Who knows so hard to help people, huh?
Well, it's not that. I mean, you want anything. It's kind of like, you know, you don't want to play tennis with a net down. That's not fun. Right. You got to have obstacles. And you know, so it's just, that's what it's about. It's about breaking through the barriers and connecting to, I mean, when I was a kid, my family's house burned down, right? We lost everything. But my soccer coach would come pick me up and get me to practice. People gave me shoes. You know, we moved in with my grandparents. I had the support system. And I remember my coach, this guy, Oliver Weiss, we had a really good club team. It was like everybody on the team was like the one thing they did well was soccer. And so people were super committed. But he would come pick me up like out of his way, his way out of his way. And I would try to thank him. And Oliver said to me, he's like, "Lawrence, don't thank me. If I see a kid with the ability and the desire, like, how can I not pick him up?" And like that just like hit me like a ton of bricks as like a teenager. It's like, wow, I want to be a person like that guy, that coach. And that's the spirit of street soccer. Like, you see when you give people the chance, like how grateful they are and how committed they are. And it's like, how can I not commit to this?
Sure.
And I think that like we just run through barriers, you know, because we're connected, everyone's plugged into the mission. And like, that's been the joy. It's just pulled so many great people together. And that's the, of course, there are difficulties to any job, but like getting to work with the Lucas in California, in LA, he started community soccer clubs and all the housing projects in Watts, and has like built that up. And now he's building his first park. And like Reed, who is in San Diego, who started with us in high school when he came and volunteered because he was maybe being a little bit delinquent, and he's just stuck with it. And then he went to Philly and helped with that program. He moved out to Sacramento, built that up. And now he's in San Diego. He's got three street soccer parks in development. He's just built a whole community around the game there and plugged into all the grassroots groups. It's just amazing. Everybody.
What is it about? I mean, and I feel like we're kind of preaching to the choir here, but I, from your perspective, especially at the grassroots level, because I got into the community of the sport later in life. I knew the game and watched it on TV and stuff like that, but I didn't grow up playing. But clearly there is nothing like soccer that connects human beings. I don't know of another sport that really does it to this degree. Obviously, clearly the sport is popular. And in this country, you know, that's where it's debatable and how popular it really is. But the fact that this tool, this soccer ball, can unite so many people, and it just does it in a different way. What is it about the sport itself that you think can is so transformational to like relationships and with human beings?
I mean, one answer to the question is like, I don't know, I don't care, but it works. Right. You know, so it's like,
thanks for tuning in, everybody.
I'm not a philosopher.
Exactly.
What'd you bring me on here for?
But I do think, like, you know, there's no premium on body type. You can be like Diego Maradona, or you can be like Benjamin Sesko, right?
Wemby.
Like,
Wemby out Wemby. There. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Anyone can play. And, like, you know, particularly small-sided, you know, even like the, like, men and women can play at like the same, you know, level. It doesn't matter. And so I think there's that. And then also just any sport, that kind of nonverbal relationship building, you know, like nothing's in the way. It's just us. We're on a team together. We're playing. I don't have to like get into language. We can just, you know, you just learn so much playing with people. It's a different type of relationship building. And
right.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe soccer, everybody's a quarterback, they say, right? Because when you have like, there's no hierarchy, something. And then I think the solidarity aspect, like we kind of like underestimated that, but like just, you know, because we work, particularly when we were working and still working at the homeless centers, people are isolated. And like all of a sudden you're part of the soccer community, which is like the biggest community in the world, I'm pretty sure. So all of a sudden you can talk to anybody about the game that you're playing. Yeah. And like, it's, you're just part of a huge thing. Yeah. You're not alone anymore.
Yeah, connection to everyone. I mean, the World Cup is coming. Speaking of connecting everyone, the biggest part of the world, the biggest, you know, sporting event in the world is coming to these shores. It's going to be spread across 16 different cities across 3 different countries. What role you think street soccer USA is going to be a part of? How would you want to be a part of that?
So we're doing it. So my biggest fear was that the games come here and they don't get harnessed to drive the game at the grassroots level. I mean, listen, if you want to think about,
they do how get harnessed to make money though, don't they?
I think people make a lot of money. Yeah. I think there's a lot of money flying around in soccer. But
yes, we all make a lot of money.
Cash machine is now on the table.
But you know, like if we care about like the national team, which, you know, I do as someone who grew up part of the U.S. soccer system, like, well, how are we going to get better? Well, we're going to grow at the bottom of the pyramid and put upward pressure. And we can do all the tactico stuff in the world, but it's like the more people playing, competing, that's how we're going to get better as a national team. So, you know, but I think there's a lot of good to do along the way.
Yeah.
And so my fear was that the World Cup would come and it just, you know, there'd be some fields built. And
give us 1 second. All right. He's watching TV novelas. So. Very important. He needs to see his stories. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, so my biggest fear was that the World Cup would come and it would be gratuitous on a community level that, and street soccer, you know, given our mission, wouldn't harness like the power, but we did. We actually, you know, we had these great stories where we had been working in communities for a long time, and we sometimes you inherit fields that people build for you, or you play on some field you get a permit for, but we actually were able to build these street soccer parks, which are like purpose-built facilities. So 2 fields so you can host a big community tournament. They have a clubhouse next to them, lights, and they're really beautiful. And when we built them in Sacramento and here in the Bronx in New York, the trajectory of our program just changed. So we took the stories and the data, and we went to the biggest soccer sponsor in the world, Visa, and said, hey, we want $26 million to build these all over the country in 26 cities. And they said, well, Lawrence, we're not going to do that. I didn't hear back from
them. I didn't know you could just go get a Visa. Well, they say, now you give me money.
We tried. No, but it was incredible. And they I thought I blew the meeting. But they came back and said, hey, we really appreciated the thoughtfulness that we put together, and we want to do it. We'll do a third of them. And they've since doubled it. So they're funding us to in all the host cities to build these street soccer parks, and we set the goal of building 26. So in addition to the 14 that Visa's supporting, we've now got 22 of them funded, and we're working on getting to 26, but they're all in motion. So we're building 26 of these this year. We just opened in Sunset Park.
Where I'm from.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right on at PS94 in the schoolyard there.
Yeah.
You won't believe it, but it's a beautiful park. Ed Gilligan's family, actually, they saw the video. I took some of the kids, Haroon and TJ, some of our kids from the Bronx that grew up with us when we built the Bronx Park. We had a little media piece on CBS Local News, and Lisa Gilligan saw the piece. And she said, I've been wanting to honor, you know, my husband, who's a huge soccer fan and actually grew up in that neighborhood. I want to build a field in his honor, just like you guys did. And 18 months later, we just opened it. And we had a huge tournament on Sunday. And now we have a building. We've had a big history in Sunset Park, 600 kids in our community club. And it's going to be, this field is going to be used every day.
It's awesome, man. Yeah. We got an email about the invitation where we were busy on that day. So we were bummed we couldn't go, but
we were opening a slightly bigger field.
You guys are
unfortunately.
But I actually have some street soccer gear I meant to bring to you today, but it's actually in our clubhouse there.
So we have to go there.
We have to go there together. Very good. Very but smart now, play.
It's great to see. I mean, being, especially obviously, you know, my heart, my mom is still in Tunta Park and I'm there all the time. But we hosted, and thank you again for having us. We hosted the Times Square Cup for you guys. And so many kids from all of the different boroughs playing in the Youth Cup. And one of the things that made me so happy, I'm Dominican, Alexis is Cuban, and there was like, I think one or two teams, one of the Bronx teams, but the goalkeeper was like kind of like chubby kid. Dominican kid playing, like a Dominican kid playing soccer and like playing at a high level. And these kids were good, man. The boys and the girls, the level is so high. And again, not only do you see that camaraderie, the competition, and then just the quality of kids that grew up exactly where I grew up. And that we talk about that community and relationship. Like that is where it's so like clearly visible, and it's like an honor to be able to like be on the mic and kind of support and hype these kids up.
Yeah.
But that is where it's like so vivid of just how much the game means to them, and that's why like being a part of street soccer in our small way that we can contribute, it's just an awesome opportunity to get to witness it.
Yeah, I mean, those cups, so we like the parks that we build and the cups are like the drivers. I mean, the transformation happens every day in the neighborhoods, but those fields really, you know, elevate what they're doing, and those cups are just like, they get so excited.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
like, when you see the families come out with like coolers and stuff, you're like, oh, you're here. You're bought in. You're tapped in now.
Yeah, they're ready there all day. I mean, it's amazing, but the families get together and host barbecues for the coaches. I mean, it really is like what you hope, like you a culture and a community around the game. And those are relationships. Like my soccer buddies, a lot of them are plugged into street soccer now, but we know each other from playing together. So we trust each other and they're my friends for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, and so just creating those opportunities for kids is, you know, in relationships. I mean, I get some. So the fun thing for me watching the Times Square Cup is I when we started those programs, the coaches were kids in the programs.
Oh,
and now they're coaching that's the awesome. Younger kids. And they're good, right? Like, I mean, I watched the
one. I couldn't keep up with them. These kids are good, really good.
I watched the kid get the ball, kid who joined our Bronx team, and he like looked over his shoulder, like scanned,
dude,
turned.
Busquets.
I remember his first practice, you know? Because New York, I can see all the practices. I don't get to visit all our programs all the time. But like, you see them developing. Why? Because they're playing every day, because they love it. And they got friends. And so, you know.
I'm going to have to join one of these programs, bro.
Yeah,
I gotta
you get
quickly
on these small fields. they're like, wonderfully designed for youth development. You got the line, so they orient, you know, game awareness. They know where they are on the field, and the ball's at their feet all the time.
And plus, there's someone next to you immediately, so you got to get good with your feet. You got to get quick. There was one girl that we were watching in the girls' team. I'm like, she's going to be an NWSL like in 2 years. This girl's good. I can't remember her name, but Brooklyn, maybe, I think was the team name.
Yeah,
there was also teams from Philly and Newark as well, so it wasn't just New York. I'm born and raised in Newark, so that was beautiful to see.
Just One Soccer in Newark is a great group.
Which is, thank God, because Newark is a city that doesn't have a lot of opportunity, and it was one of the reasons why I had to leave in order to be able to pursue comedy or anything in entertainment. You just can't always, the ceiling's very low in Newark.
Yeah,
and not a lot of people entering that building anyway. You know what I mean? You're sometimes alone in that room, regardless of whether the ceiling is high or low. So you sometimes need to go out. So to see some of those teams get the same opportunities is huge. And that's probably symptomatic of every major city around this country.
Yeah, we're having an LA Cup in April, which is going to be at LA Live, which is going to be incredible. And we're trying to create this Cup series because, you know, like this is like competitive structure is like so important, and having that kind of aspirational, like I play in this tournament, I can travel here. It shows you like you put in work, like there's, you know, reward at the end of it. And, you know, for us, it's about elevating kids' expectations of themselves. And that's what the Times Square tournament does. That's what these tournaments do. It's like, oh, like I can play on the big stage if I work it.
Under like these bright lights by the tickets booth, like everybody watching. It's odd more kids weren't nervous. That's honestly, I was like, why are y'all so damn confident? What?
Iron Man is next to you.
The soccer's changing, right? It's going to be increasingly, you know, urban, increasingly small-sided. And like, like when I grew up, we played club soccer. We played at the State Cup. And it was this awesome thing. Like you won your state, you went to regionals. Mm-hmm. And now they're like so many. I'm like in this professionally and I can't even keep straight all the different competitions. But definitely for like our kids, like, we can't plug into that system. There's not. like so that's what we're really focused on now, is like create a competitive structure that people can plug into and grow with.
Yeah, that was actually my next question though. You talk about, you know, we joked around in the beginning of the episode about or the beginning of the interview about, you know, are you getting a piece of this in case the kids go, but is there a track, is that part of your system, is to find a way when there's kids that do poke their head up a little bit talent wise to say maybe they need the next level of tutelage or development, maybe there's a fast track or at least just something a little closer to get them to the professional game that they didn't have before?
I think our system's broken for these kids. Like there's not you turn 12, like we can get them a scholarship to play at any academy, but like logistically, is that going to happen? Is it going to be the right fit and environment for them? So we've done that. You know, we had one kid from our Minneapolis program who was like super talented. We got him a tryout in Germany. So he had this amazing experience, flew over there, and they're like, if we had found him 2 years ago, he would have made it. You know, but he's just a little too old, but it was still a great experience. So, you know, increasingly that's like a problem we're solving for, because we believe that like people should be able to go as high as they can with their potential, you know. And we're trying to do that in soccer, but also in other walks of life. So I think in a lot of ways, like we're a workforce development organization. Like we're equipping kids with teamwork skills as they grow. We're training them as coaches to get the first job. And then I don't care I'd love it if they play professional soccer, but I want them to, you know, achieve their potential. So, you know, Uniglow, who's a partner of ours, like they have an amazing program where you can start at the retail level and go into a career management. We're trying to feed people into those opportunities. But no, I think it's on the soccer side, it's definitely a problem. Like we should be able to field a competitive national team from the New York metro area just on population.
I literally say this all the time.
Yeah.
Uruguay is 3.9 million people, and look how incredible they've been. New York is 8.5, and that's just the people that sleep here at night. Never mind who come in here. Or the metro region is 20 million. How are we not able to get a grade 11 out of this?
Well, I mean, I don't spend every day thinking about those problems, but you know, if I look at it, I just feel like, you know, we have a system designed for a country the size of Portugal laid on top of the United States, just 350 million people. And like, you know, we need to right size our system and focus, because there's so many kids that value this opportunity, you know, just to play and be a part of a team that they don't have it otherwise. So it's a pay to play system, which is great, but I went to business school because I wanted to learn the skills I needed to grow street soccer. And I was thinking like, oh, maybe we start like a social enterprise side of this. But, you know, if you create a business, it goes highest willingness to pay, and it has certain conclusions. Right. And so that's why I really value our nonprofit status, because it allows us to be very pure to, you know, our mission, and we can go after what we want to. Because
you don't have to worry about what the market will bear, because that doesn't matter.
Yeah, they just have consequence. You know, exactly. So the incentives are like lined up for us. But you know, the pay to play system it's highest willingness to pay and creates experiences that cost money, and that's great. It creates awesome experiences, and there are great people in it. But like, it's not designed for the bottom of the pyramid, if you will. You know, people who aren't going to do that. So that's what we're trying to do, is like, let's design something for the kids in the neighborhoods for whom it's our mission to serve.
Right. So,
we're figuring it out.
It's basically, I mean, look, if the U.S. men do not win the World Cup in 2026, it's going to be your fault, Lawrence. Well, that's what we're saying.
I mean, no pressure, dude.
talk to me in 46.
Let me get a little bit more time here.
Lawrence, Ken, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything you want to let the audience know? Is there any way
they can support?
If somebody's listening,
maybe they have kids, or maybe they want to be a coach?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So streetsoccerusa.org, you can support us. We're a big tent, you know, so come and get involved. It's a wonderful group of people. And, you know, just to point out, we'll be opening a park 2 times a month between February and June, all over the country, all host cities. We already opened in Denver. So yeah, no matter where you are, there's a place to plug in, and we're mobilizing people behind the mission. So be part of it.
I love
it's
it.
Beautiful. Be like Daryl Grove.
Absolutely.
Come out. Well put.
Absolutely.
Lauren, thank you so much, brother. Really
thank
appreciate
you guys.
It.
All right. Appreciate you.
Welcome back. Maybe I hope you enjoyed that interview. But now it's time for a Rapido Reaction.
Let's go.
Carter, what you got for us?
All right, the USMNT dropped their jerseys. What's your take? We're going to go through each one of them.
Well, they were leaked, right? These aren't official.
This is leaked.
But it was leaked. I don't want anybody at US Soccer getting mad at us.
We can reach out to some people. This is one of those kits where I'm looking at this first one. This is the home kit with the wavy.
The Waldo. The stripes.
The wavy Waldo. Wavy Waldo.
Waldo
if he did Molly. I think
This is what I like about this is I can tell this is one of those kits that I'm going to want to own. I don't love it at first sight, but I'm going to want to own it because it's going to feel iconic.
It's some people were basically being like, just redo the Waldo kits. Why
you can't do that?
Why the wavy lines? But I mean, I felt this way about the last kit.
Damn, you're getting choked up, bro.
Seeing it in person. I mean, like seeing it on TV or seeing it on a 2D image is like doesn't do it justice when you see it in person. Those Nike kits are actually really, really nice. So I'm expecting it to look really cool in person. Let's also look at the away kit.
By the way, I know you said 2D image, but in my head, you're so Latino. I thought you said dude ene. And I was like, why are you watching it on there, bro?
I can only read the jerseys in Spanish.
En español. Oh, usa. Usa what, bro? What do you want me to usa?
What are you usando?
All right. You're not seeing much.
Black with some stars back there.
I saw another leak where there was like a little bit of color added to the collar. Yeah. Just like an extra border. You know what? Again, another one of those kits and I'm like, I bet you on a pitch that's going to look crazy, though.
We'll see. The one in black doesn't impress me.
I like that one stripes
much.
And the other one stars. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You put them together.
I mess with the stripe one.
You get a mom who has a kid on both teams and they go, you know, I guess, why would you wear those? But if you stitch both them kits together, you got stars and stripes.
All right. What's next, Carter?
That's pretty good.
All right. Of course, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, they had a very famous man standing still the entire game, mimicking a very famous statue. And then, and of course, an Algerian player mocked the person. So let's get your take on that.
Yeah. So this is the guy's going by Lumumba, which obviously the name of the former president of a very historic figure for the Democratic Republic of Congo. And an Algerian player scored. They beat the Congo 1-0. It was in extra time. It was a
119th
really,
minute
really
winner.
Intense game. And this is how he chooses to celebrate, by mocking the celebration.
Is he mocking it?
When you score a goal, you do the celebration and then you lay down on the ground. Yeah, you're kind of mocking it, but
it's a little mocking. But I also don't feel like it's wildly disrespectful. I don't think it's respectful. I don't think it's wildly disrespectful.
Sure.
But there's also like you score 119th winner. You want to be what's the thing about you that I could point out? Well, this dude right here is the star of AFCON.
You know, we've done roasts, right? Yeah. We know what is sort of a weak point, what an angle we can sort of get at, but. The credit to the player, I forgot his name who scored, but he what's his name?
No.
The player scored, but he apologized because he was like, I wasn't aware how significant the
figure
was.
That's why I said
that. And the guy this is also surreal. He's 90 minutes in the same exact pose.
Yeah, I'm also not that impressed by this feat.
You're not. Your arm should be numb. How are you? Your shoulder, the pain of holding. You can't hold your arm up for 4 minutes, bro.
You don't know that. You've never seen me hold my arm up.
You're not impressed by this? This is
not
crazy.
Not at all.
Literally insane.
When I was in school, I got in trouble and they made me hold a nickel all the way at the top of the corner. This was my way of not leaving the corner.
To lean on the wall to hold.
I was holding you. That's worse. You have to put pressure. Put a wall and a nickel for this guy.
Alexis is crazy.
We got to do a video. How long Alexis can hold his arm up?
I appreciate what he's doing. I just don't think it's like, this physical feat.
Alexis, sometimes I have to tie my turban and it takes like 7 or 8 minutes and my arms are sore afterwards.
You are
insane. You are crazy.
Your lack of yoga skills has nothing to do with this man or me.
This man is an athlete. Just to wrap this up, he did receive an apology from the player. And the Algerian team invited them, I think, to their hotel.
To what? Get something off the top shelf?
Where they also apologized as well. The show. So that's why
I don't think he was being disrespectful. So I'm glad they didn't make too much of it.
Shout out to Lumumba, man. That was cool. Really dope. All right. What do we got next?
This is a fun one. Gabon played so poorly in AFCON that they just suspended the entire team. Thoughts? Reactions?
This is okay. Look, for people who love AFCON and are like, wanted to get more respect and more this and more that, I appreciate that. And I'm with you, bro. I hate the way that Europeans talk about AFCON. Mm-hmm. They treat it like, why are you taking my best players away from my team?
Sure, sure.
As opposed to, this is a respectful thing. But also, I know sometimes you don't like when the chaos is brought up. No, this is kind of part of it as well. And you can see this tweet right here. It's just raw chaos. And this is what we love about AFCON, man.
So what ended up happening, look, they lost all three games. And literally the whole...
The nation was like, oh, no, no more soccer.
The
country was like,
done with the federation shutdown. They fired all the staff. They fired all the coaches. They fired all the players. Are basically, they are no longer Gabon players. There's like basically no institution right now running the Gabon Federation, because that's how upset the
it's illegal,
like like the president was of their performance. They tried their best. I mean, but
did
it's
they?
I mean, I was obviously watching Obama and Denis Bawanga. So I'm like, I caught like two of their games, and they just overpowered. I mean, they're not good. I mean, what are you gonna do? It seems like a little bit of an exaggerated thing to do all this, but I guess they expected a lot more.
I know Aubameyang gets a lot of heat for the way his character is portrayed itself at certain clubs, specifically Arsenal. I feel bad though, because he could have played for, I think, France, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And he chose to play for Gabon. You deserve better than this, bro, for your career in the international.
All right, what's next?
Patson Daka plays for Zambia. He scored a goal and he tried to celebrate and it went horribly. Here, let's take a look and then get your thoughts.
Yes, Patson Daka he scored a goal. This is in the group stages and he is celebrating. I believe this might have been the first game at AFCON.
The top part of this image is like, he did not mean for this to happen. No one means for this to happen.
So he
hold this position for 90 minutes. Now that where's Patson Daka's fans?
He's doing like a front flip, but his arms kind of just give out, and he just is bouncing his body on his neck, and everybody was really worried because he scores a great goal, and then is in the situation where like, yo, are we gonna get the
stretcher?
The stretcher. I was thinking camilla because I could only think of it in Spanish.
Again, Tudene.
But Tudene, you know what I
mean? And y'all think I'm wrong. I mean, clearly he needs a neck brace. You know what I mean? How do you get whiplash from your own celebration, bro?
When goal celebrations go wrong, could probably be its own series. There aren't too many. Like, this is like, oh, sure. While I'm watching, I'm like, yo, dude, are you okay? I want to make sure you can still, like, take your kids to school.
This would have been the biggest neck injury of the last few months.
That's right. There was no other neck injuries.
what are y'all thinking about? What do y'all think I mean?
All right. What's the last one, Carter?
All right, last one.
Carter didn't get that, by the way. He stared at me like a
AFCON quarterfinals. Let's get some predictions from your book.
Why don't
you
Google that while we do this?
AFCON quarterfinals. So who do we got left? All right, let's put them up on screen. So first up, we have
Mali versus Senegal.
Mali against Senegal. Mali has been, I believe, got into the round of 16 through, if I'm not mistaken, they got in through in one, like one own goal. They were one of the best third place teams.
Right.
I could be wrong. I think that's what the game, but Senegal, again, with you know, two Everton players, Idrissa Gueye what am I forgetting his name? The winger, Illiman Ndiaye.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have to be heavy favorites here. So Senegal should be taking this.
I like how Mali came out and said that they were going to try to play beautiful football in AFCON. Best of luck to them. You know what I mean? I don't think that that's necessarily possible. But the fact that they got this far, I think, is probably already a win for Mali.
Yeah.
I think Senegal takes this. I think it's going to be pretty easy.
All right. And next up, we have...
We have Cameroon versus Morocco.
Cameroon against Morocco. This is going to be a tough one. I think the drama with everything going with Cameroon and Eto and the
fact that they had two different squads, was the coach fired or not? Two different coaches.
You would imagine, and Morocco has just been fantastic this tournament, and so we're going to favor them. I don't think that's too crazy, but I could see an upset.
Okay, because I do think that upset's going to happen. I think Cameroon gets it over Morocco. Morocco just doesn't have the same vibes that they had in the World Cup. They don't seem to have the same level of surprise. Yeah. You know what I mean? And sometimes when you want to play that style that Morocco plays, you need to kind of be at the top of your confidence. Sure. And I just don't see it this year. So I think Cameroon sneaks it out.
And then
the chaos continues.
Algeria against Nigeria. I'm going to go with Nigeria.
Nigeria easily for both of us.
Their last game, I think Victor Osimhen, and you saw even him arguing with Adama Lookman. He was...
He
got a
brace. He got a brace, and he was still mad at him for not passing him the ball in one moment.
He legitimately stopped playing. He was like, "I'm not doing this with y'all no more, bro." So, that's crazy.
I think the hunger to win AFCON is huge for Nigeria, especially after missing the World Cup.
They don't qualify for the World Cup. I think that's why I'm pushing for them to potentially win the whole thing. Kind of like when Italy won the Euros and still hasn't qualified for the World Cup.
Right.
But I do think Nigeria is going to win. But Algeria, defensively, the best defensive team in all of AFCON. But you needed a 119th minute for
come on.
So, why don't we go Egypt versus Ivory Coast? Can I just go Ivory Coast first? Get that out of the way. I think they're going to beat Egypt. Now, who do you think?
I think Egypt's going to win this.
I knew that you were going to say that.
No. I'm rooting for Egypt to win the whole thing. I think it'll be a really good story. So, yeah, let's see.
I think Mali is the only one out of the three who haven't won it yet. And I think they're going to stop right here in the quarterfinals. So best of luck to winning another AFCON.
Sure. Oh, one of the three?
What do you mean? One of the four. Sorry, one of the four. There's three that have won it.
There's eight and three that haven't won it.
Oh, the four. Whatever. Yes.
I don't know what you're
Mali is the only team left in the quarterfinals that hasn't won an AFCON.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Well, best of luck to Mali, but I'm rooting for Egypt. All right. All right, everybody. Thank you again. Another Rapido Reactions in the books. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you to Lawrence Cann.
Shout out to Lawrence. Always appreciate him coming through. Always, and it's, you know, all the incredible work he does at Street Soccer USA is definitely nothing to scoff at. So thank you for coming by and telling the you know, our audience his story and all the
Soccer saved him, and now he's trying to save soccer.
And now he's saving us as well. Oh. We appreciate it. All right, everybody. Thank you again for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode. We have another great guest on Monday. I forgot who.
Doesn't matter. You'll see it when it pops up. I don't know why we talk about it ahead of time anyway. This makes no sense.
I think they play in the NBA. I'm almost sure. But so be on the lookout for Monday's episode.
That's right. LeBron James is going to be on the
LeBron
show.
James. Okay. There it is. Everybody, print it.
Yeah. You heard it. Come back on Monday because you're going anyway. This automatically downloads on your phone.
All right. As always, make sure hit like, subscribe, follow us on all socials at Soccer Cooligans, and we'll see you on Monday. Have a good weekend. I hope all your teams lose. Take care, everybody. Peace.
Love you guys. Tell your mother I said hello.